75.
Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 75 for August 29, 2011. This is Michael Loft.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm Joe Steinkamp.
And I think I heard Eddie or someone in there as well, right?
You did. Welcome, Eddie, to the podcast. Good to have you.
Yes, all dogs are welcome.
Yes, he may comment on any number of stories.
He's incredibly opinionated.
Oh, yeah, you know it.
We have a lot of news, actually a smaller number, but I think very interesting stories to cover today. And we're putting at the top some very exciting and recent announcements from Apple. First off, Mr. Steve Jobs is resigning as the CEO of Apple, and he will be replaced by Tim Cook.
Phenomenal.
So the big question, and we can have a little debate about this, is what does this mean? Does this really matter? I mean,
I think this has been coming for a long, long time, and I was surprised by the amount of surprise, really. You know, he has had some health issues, and this was going to happen eventually, and people are really asking some interesting questions. What does this mean? What does this mean for accessibility? Because Steve is gone, does this mean we're not going to have that anymore? I sincerely doubt that, and people are also asking, is Apple going to continue to be innovative without Steve at the helm? And I think absolutely, if Steve has done his job correctly, and I think that he has, he's shared his vision with the company and certainly with the people who work very closely with him, like Tim Cook. And I don't think that just because he's gone, everything is going to come collapsing down. What about you? What do you think?
I don't think he's really gone yet either. I mean, yes, there's some health issues, and we're not going to speculate on that because there's not much known about that. And plus, that's a private matter. But more than that, you know, the board had met in July to put forth the succession plan. So this had kind of gotten out through the Wall Street Journal. People were kind of looking for this. But Steve is still chairman for Apple, and he's still an employee of Apple. He's just taking a different role. He's not necessarily day-to-day CEO. And, you know, he's the type of guy that's still very much involved in his company and what he's doing. He designed the iPad with the team from his hospital bed.
Amazing.
So I don't think we're going to see much. And even if he does take a lesser role, it's going to take a long time for that to go through, because when you design, say, something like the iPad 3, which, you know, it's safe to say that that's coming, that's already designed now. That's already over in Foxconn. That's already kind of worked out. And iPad 4, or at least the rough concepts of it, are probably in the drawing board. So it'll be 18 to 24 months before we ever see something that might not have Steve's fingerprints all over it.
Oh, Steve's still going to be involved. And I'm curious now, he wants to be chairman of the board. And if that happens, if not more powerful, could he have powers that he doesn't have in his position as CEO, where he still has to answer to the board?
Yeah, that's
interesting.
We'll
just have to wait
and
see where that goes.
It's not really clear what he'll be able to do that he couldn't before. But if you're curious about the resignation letter, the text of it is actually online. You can check that out in the show notes.
Yeah, we also have a link to some of his top video moments. There was also an article today talking about Tim Cook reassuring Apple employees. So that was my concern. It's not that really will things change, it's public perception. And I'm always one that says perception is 9/10 of reality. So if the employees don't feel that they have the leadership they once had, or consumers, I mean, Jobs, you got to say the guy he has this canny way. He has this way of making his stuff look cool.
Way better than a laptop.
And it just helps it to sell.
Magical.
And the stock market reflects that too, because you've got things with the stock market.
Terrific.
Yeah, and Sony and Samsung and Acer all got kind of a positive hit out of this. And that's a shame, because, again, I don't think in the short term you're going to see anything like that. We're going to go over here in a second some rumors about iPhone 5 and some of the upcoming stuff. And again, if there's any implications, it's going to take a while for that to kind of shake through.
Yeah, I think the public is just sort of thinking the sky is falling right this second. But I think people will come to their senses. And I think, again, the employees being reassured by Tim and just going forth doing their day-to-day thing, I think this is going to work itself out.
Unbelievably great.
Well, a few items other than that that are being put in the rumor mill, but they're coming from some very credible resources. So we know, if not all of these, most of these will likely happen. And they include things like the iPhone 5 will be very likely a dual-mode world phone. And that tying to the fact that the iPhone will likely be launched simultaneously with AT&T, Verizon, and a third player, if not a fourth, but Sprint getting into the game. And that coming from the Wall Street Journal, who usually gets their sources right. I mean, they usually there you're talking about probably leaked from inside or something. But so if indeed it does happen, comes to Sprint, that opens up some very interesting scenarios. A, will Sprint have the back-end resources to handle it? Or will they have to change their unlimited data? They got commercials on TV right now saying they're the only one offering unlimited data. And there's also a rumor of T-Mobile maybe having the iPhone as well before they get gobbled up and become AT&T. So if indeed that's true, you're talking about the iPhone 5 being designed to support all carriers. So that would be great for competition. Many argue that should have been done quite a while ago. My big thing is it'll really help with price and competition when they have to compete for the prices of data and transfer and texting and so forth.
Yeah, Apple has sort of done a 180. I mean, they started out exclusively with AT&T and they really wanted to hang on to this carrier exclusivity thing, at least in the U.S. Now, I know that in other places in the world, they find it a little bit strange that, what do you mean you can only get the phone on this one carrier? So this is a change and a welcome change, I think.
Another from the rumor mill says that there will also be a new, less expensive iPhone 4 with only 8 gig of storage. That would make sense. Certainly they did the same with the 3GS when the 4 came out.
Yep.
Came out with an 8 gig unit. And perhaps even more notable is obviously they want to get away from supporting the 3GS because of some limitations. So as they go forward with their operating systems. Also in the rumor mill is that they are looking to hire someone. There's no LTE support in the iPhone 5, but that they're trying to find someone with skills in that area to properly deploy that. So we'll find out what is fact and what is fiction all coming up, but it looks like the announcement will be made in September and the official launches will be at some point in October. And we'll let you know as that develops.
Phenomenal.
Well, here's an article that I found pretty interesting, and it's about a Braille iPad case. And the article claims this could make tablets useful for the blind. Now, what I found interesting about this article was that it states in the article, well, the iPads are wonderful things, but of course they are unusable by the blind, which is, you know, obviously not true. So this iPad case, Braille iPad case, was developed, and it's going to have an area on the case which is updated with Braille information, which is kind of an interesting concept, but I don't know that it's necessary for the iPad itself. May have some interesting implications for tablets in general.
Well, what equally concerned me, despite the misinformation at the beginning, was that it said apps would have to be custom written to take advantage
of this. Yes. And what's interesting is this concept. It's just a prototype at the moment, but it won an award.
Wonderful.
And, you know, great for the guy for having won an award, but I'm concerned that someone put this much time and effort and gained some attention for doing this when the iPad itself is already quite accessible as it is.
No, but this is big. If, you know, like I said, there are no current plans to market this, but there was a lot of interest in the device. So that's usually what has to happen before any manufacturer will consider production of it. But I think this is very important. I hope it is pursued. Hopefully one of the many companies that listens to this will give it some thought, because a friend and I talked about this way back in the 90s, that ultimately if we want true representation of what's going on that screen, we're going to have to get beyond the 40 and 80 cell model and actually get to something that truly represents the screen, either in Braille or tactilely, you know, where the graphics are and the print lettering and so forth. So
I
really hope this is
with
pursued.
You there. Yeah, I think that this has really interesting implications. Again, maybe not as it's currently designed as a sort of way to make the iPad accessible, but having this Braille just pop up, and we're not talking piezoelectric cells here or anything like that. So it could lead to some very, very fascinating developments.
Yeah, it's done based on light, the emission of light. So I think that's very interesting. And I really hope this pans out and someone does something with this. But on to other stuff, because we certainly have enough of that. But if you use taxi cabs, there's a cool iPhone app called Taxi Magic.
Magical.
And Chris Gilland, writing for AppleViz.com, says that you can get a list of local cab companies near you. You can get descriptions on the services they offer. You can even book your rides and even pay for the rides via the app. So
it's very cool, actually. I've used it myself and would highly recommend it to anyone who is traveling to an unfamiliar place, or hey, why not use it in your hometown? It is very easy to pay for your cab and search for what's available in your area and just book it and be on your way.
It says you even get push notifications that the cab is on its way. Did you see that in action?
I did see it, although the cab had actually arrived, and the push notification saying it had been dispatched came about a minute later. But that was kind of an interesting situation because it literally took the cab about 5 minutes to get there. So I don't know. It may have just been a matter of timing that the push notification happened after the person arrived, but it you will be notified one way or the other.
And it said that cabbies may not know about this app, so you may have to actually call the dispatching office to inform the driver that this is legitimate and you're not just trying to weasel out of paying. Did you have that with any drivers, or were they aware of it?
I did not have that. It went very, very smoothly. I was really impressed.
Yeah, and he made some other points. I don't know if have these ever been issues for you, either worrying about exact change? I think we've all done that, but just either credit card theft, him copying down your numbers, or making sure you have the right denominations of cash with you, those kind of things?
That can be an issue because some cabs don't accept credit or debit cards. Some of them want just cash, and a lot of times it's hard to have the exact right change and so on. So it's a lot more convenient just to get the pay out of the way first. You can add a tip during that process. You can just say, hey, I want to do 20% and hope this guy earns it or whatever. Or you don't have to add a tip, and you can tip the driver directly in cash and just pay for the rest via the app itself.
Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing.
Well, speaking of traveling and knowing where you're going and others knowing where you're going, it looks like in South Korea at least 27,000 people are joining together for a class action lawsuit against Apple for about $26 million, so getting almost $1 million apiece if they can pull it off. Basically complaining about Apple's ability to kind of track user movements. And the government got like $2,855, but obviously Apple's much more concerned right now with things like Samsung and patent infringement disputes and all that fun stuff. But be curious to see what happens.
Wonderful.
Well, have you ever been in a hurry to shut your Mac down or reboot it so that you can move on to more important things? If you have, there are a couple of handy shortcut keys for you to do that. If you want to reboot the Mac quickly, you can use Command-Control-Eject, and that's going to reboot the machine. It's not going to prompt you for any, do you want to save your work or anything like that? It's just going to reboot and go away and come back again. If you want to shut it down, it's Command-Option-Control-Eject. Eject.
Awesome.
Well, because our blind folks love voices with choices, in text-to-speech news, it looks like Nuance has acquired Loquendo. And Nuance already has 80 languages supported, but Loquendo adds about 15 Latin and what they call the Romance languages to the party. This transaction should be finalized in September, and this will even help folks with Dragon naturally speaking for both the PC and Mac. And if you need some more fun with voices, Ivona has a page with some new voices you can go up and play with. The one we talked about earlier, Sally, the teenage female, that actually to me sounds like she's at least in college. There's Ivy, which is a child's voice, and a few others there. Gwyneth from Welsh female, and some German voices, and you can get the link and play with that over at SerialTalk.com.
There's also an article talking about text-to-speech for Mozilla, and basically what they've done is they've taken eSpeak and ported it to JavaScript, which is kind of an interesting thing to have done.
Well, again, going back to what we talked about in an earlier podcast, that combined with JavaScript and HTML5, that you can make self-voicing web browsers, and though even though Firefox is the only thing today, that Google Chrome is pretty close, and that with mods, Internet Explorer and Safari could be up to speed to do that, but you are correct. As of today, Firefox is the only tool.
Yeah, and the nice thing about this is that it's consistent cross-platform, so you don't have some people getting a particular experience because they're using a different browser or different OS or whatever. As long as you've got Firefox on something and you employ this JavaScript, then your site is going to be rendered in a consistent way.
Well, I guess the only two downsides right now are, A, most people think eSpeak sucks, and I guess the other thing is that there's really no current ability to adjust the speed, so what you get is what you get.
Come on, I'm really not that bad.
Yeah, and speaking of speed, it is actually, the way they developed this is kind of inefficient, but I think they kind of wanted to do a proof of concept first and then say, okay, now what do we do to improve it?
But it is exciting. I think we will see a lot of development with self-voicing browsers, websites that aren't accessible. Instead of trying to work with all the different screen readers, will actually look for some way to make their site talk within a specific web browser. So then we'll have to have every browser installed to make sure we cover all our bases. I'll be curious to see where this goes in the future. It looks like NVDA is good, at least through 2012. They've procured some funding from Adobe, as well as the Mozilla Foundation, makers of Firefox and the Thunderbird email client. And, of course, maybe about $20,000 of donations from individuals like myself who gave $20, and some gave many more, to support the project and keep it going into the future. So we're good for at least another year, it would appear.
Yeah. The nice thing about this is that it's not just dedicated to making improvements to NVDA. The guys are working closely with Adobe and Mozilla and Yahoo to make sure that accessibility changes are sort of working across the board. So this isn't NVDA specific where, okay, we'll work with this and nothing else. They're trying to come up with some things that are universal.
What's interesting to me, because, you know, we've talked about how, you know, you're going to have to use multiple sites for music services or multiple sites to get all the different TV shows and videos. And it's looking like, as you mainstream accessibility, you could get to a point where you have to use multiple tools to access different services and different websites and software. This sounds really cool. Out of all the mobility stuff that we've talked about, a new project called Tacit, that's what they're calling it right now. It's a sonar for the blind. It is a hand-mounted haptic sonar
glove. Yeah.
Yeah, basically. It's, yeah, this I was trying to read the long description here, but basically, right, it's a glove.
Yes.
Measures between 1 inch and up to 3.5 meters, or just over 10 feet. It has a fast response reaction time of just milliseconds, and supposedly all the people that have tested it quickly picked up on how to use it within seconds. Basically, it increases vibration, I guess, to your hand as items get closer. It has a few limitations at present, but they're working on it. I really hope, Ricky, this is developed, because for one, it is not going to be ugly.
Exactly.
And it should be very economical to deploy and a great tool to pick up, definitely for what the cane doesn't get. May not be as useful for you as a dog user, but what if something happens, your dog gets hurt and all of a sudden your dog gets sick and you need to travel without it? Now you've got to have some tool that's going to fill in quickly, easy to learn, and give you the functionality you need.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this because, again, it's not bulky and stupid looking. And the guy actually addresses this in his article. He really thought about the market that he was going for. And he says blind people do care about how they look. And, you know, he didn't want to make this mobility aid that was inaccessible in terms of price. So I think this thing is going to cost about $65 to manufacture. So not a whole lot more than that to actually purchase. I'm really looking forward to this being developed.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Two exciting announcements for NFL fans. First of all, we're very excited to report that finally people can use NFL Season Pass accessibly. We talked about this 2 years ago, that to use it, A, at the time System Access was the only screen reader that could pick up on it, and then people learned that they could actually run System Access, and then for some reason they could go use their other screen reader
we opened up.
But even then they had to listen to the low bandwidth. They couldn't use the real broadband and get higher quality audio on the football games. So that has been resolved this year. We're very excited to announce that. But also, people are playing around with the Fantasy League. And this is an iPhone app that first indications appear that this thing is very, very accessible. Yeah, it says you can even join and create leagues. You can check live fantasy scoring. You can start an ad and drop players and do all that cool stuff that folks do when playing fantasy league sports. Now, the only downside they said is once you register, they had to close the app before they could get back in and start playing around with it. But I'll be curious to hear from those of you who like to indulge in fantasy sports and play around with the NFL app. It is free and at least partially accessible, so let us know how that works out for you.
Right on. ACB and Google have partnered, and they've created a survey on computer usage patterns. This is actually quite a lengthy survey. I think it's worthwhile to take, but I think the problem is that it might actually be too lengthy and or too complex for some users. I don't know if you've taken this yet, Michael, but the survey claims it'll take about 20 minutes to complete. And for some people, that's been more like an hour. You're presented with some tables where you have several different options to compare and select the appropriate answers. And again, I think some users may find this a little difficult to get through.
No, I haven't taken it yet, so I will see how quickly it takes me to get through. But I did fill out one applying to be a beta tester for future Google accessibility, which I never heard from them, probably because I'm a broadcaster. But that was quite lengthy, so I can imagine this thing goes into great detail. Well, service agency that I always thought was quite useless. I'd never really know exactly what they do. This is the Job Accommodation Network, or JAN, but they compiled a list of three accessible ways to use Quitter for getting your news and posting all your important diatribes out there. Of course, two of the three I'm sure most people already know about. One, of course, being Quitter, and the other being EasyChirp.
Yep.
And something else called GreaseMonkey, that's some extension that you can plug into Firefox, and using JavaScript, you can actually modify the way web pages are laid out. So that sounds like a geek tool. I doubt too many people are going to be playing with that.
Absolutely. I think I'll stick with Quitter, but I really like that there is more than one option out there. Well, I was recently asked about this next story on Twitter, and it's something that a lot of people don't know how to do, and that is how to safely clean your scanner glass. After a while, those things get fingerprints, dust, and stuff all over them, and naturally you get OCR errors, because as you scan things, those become a part of the image that's being OCR'd. So the answer to this question is less is more. You definitely don't want to hose your scanner down with a glass cleaner and hope for the best. It's actually best to just use a dry or slightly damp microfiber cloth to wipe off the scanner. If you do need to use a bit of glass cleaner, that's all right. Just spritz it on the cloth and again, wipe it off, and then go over the glass again with the dry microfiber cloth. You don't want to use some sort of cloth that's going to scratch the scanner. And a lot of people seem to think that isopropyl alcohol is the way to go, but it turns out that leaves streaks, so you probably want to leave that alone as well.
Yeah, and you also want to leave alone using compressed air, which is something I do to clean a lot of electronics, but that claims you can actually push the dust underneath the glass, making it even harder to clean. But if you're going to use a glass cleaner, you have to make sure it doesn't contain any one of these toxic chemicals, including acetone, ammonia, benzene. Can't even say this next one. Carbon tetrachloride. And like you said, don't use the isopropyl alcohol. But if you're going to clean electronics, isopropyl alcohol is the one you want to use, not rubbing alcohol with a lot of water that can destroy that netbook or other device. So
yep.
Just good stuff to keep in mind. But there's also links in this article. If you go over to serotalk.com, they also talk about proper cleaning of your keyboard, mouse, smartphone, tablet, and even your video displays. See, there's so much good stuff over at SerialTalk.com. That's why you got to read the show notes. Well, some people still like Windows XP, and maybe one of the reasons is that it is still faster than Windows 7. However, we found 17 tips for speeding up how Windows 7 runs. So again, you have to use discretion when you take advice like this, because anytime you start disabling services, there's always potential consequences. But I did many of these things, and my Windows 7 is running much faster. They include things like disabling visual effects. And keep in mind, this wasn't an article written for the blind. Then I also talked about disabling the search indexing feature, which will still find things, but it does disable, like if you want to search your Outlook messages. So I end up turning mine back on for that purpose. But if you don't use Outlook, maybe no problem there. One that's very controversial, especially with security folks, I'm sure I'll get email about this, they recommend even disabling the user account control, or the UAC, as they claim it annoys most people, and sometimes it's just sitting there stopping your process and prompting you, and maybe you don't see that prompt right away, or it's just scanning everything to decide. I don't know. That's a touchy one. That's a personal decision. But also mentioned are 10 unnecessary Windows services that most people can live without.
Yeah, I don't know about this one.
Oh, I did a lot of them. The services, there's a lot of services. There's like 100 plus services running that a lot of that stuff you don't need.
Oh, I agree with that completely. But it's talking about disabling the print spool service and some other things that you might disable those things. And you go to print something and you forget that you've done so. And you're spending hours trying to troubleshoot this problem, not remembering that you've actually disabled the print spool service. So again, this is a personal choice, and it's something that you should consider and sort of think about the consequences before you do any of these things.
Yeah, you want to know what you're doing, or certainly other than disabling, you could set things to manual so that they will only run if they're needed. And that way, maybe then the print spooler won't run until the first time that you need to do a print job. I don't know, but you are correct. You have to proceed with caution. And if you have no idea what we're talking about, then ignore it. But also on the Windows 7 front, many people buy computers, but you don't get a copy of Windows 7 included with it, that nice little DVD. Now, why is that important? Well, maybe you have to reinstall your Windows operating system. So we found some cool links for you. But what do you need to do first? First of all, you need to write down your 25-digit Windows product key, or hopefully it's on a sticker on the computer that you don't remove, but it may not be. Make note of what version of Windows 7 you're actually using, because there's Ultimate, there's Home Premium, or there is Professional. And you also need to make note of whether it's 32-bit or 64-bit, although I think all new computers that I've seen anyway ship with Windows 64-bit. Yeah. Maybe there's some 32-bit machines, but I haven't seen them. But what we found that may be of interest to you, we found links to all of the ISO images. These are copies of Windows 7, so you can download them, burn them to a DVD. And then if you have to reinstall your Windows or maybe do some kind of repair, you have what you need without having to go out and pay someone $60 an hour to help you with that. And again, if you have no idea what we're talking about, ignore it. But that's a cool tool. So we have those links over at SerialTalk.com.
Well, if you are looking for convention highlights, they are available, at least for the NFB. You can check out the link in the show note to catch the highlights from 2011 and for previous years as well.
And that's also available on SAMNet and via SerialTalk.com. But your easiest way to get to all of it is, of course, the use of iBlink Radio. We have an area called 2011 Convention Coverage. So you can take advantage of that, get all the NFB stuff, the ACB, all of our individual 32 interviews that we did at the ACB and NFB conventions, as well as the infamous controversial Tech Chat 109 and some stories covered by the BBC. So it is the best collection of 2011 convention coverage you're going to find anywhere. And where else? But in iBlink Radio for both Android and iOS.
Well, another self-promotional stuff. There's this weird show I recently heard about. Oh, wait, I actually was involved in that, along with Joe Steinkamp, and we'll be having other guests on the show as well. It is a new monthly podcast called End of Line. You can check that out at eolshow.com, and you can also follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/eolshow.
And we are still looking, after a few great suggestions, but still looking, have a few weeks left, for a new name for the Serotalk Tech Chat.
Serotalk Tech Chat, take one.
Welcome to the Serotalk Tech Chat number.
Horrible. Serotalk Tech Chat, take two.
Welcome to the Sarah Chalk
Tech. Sarah Talk Tech Chat. Come on, man. Take three.
Welcome to Sarah Chick Talk Cast. No, well, that could be a show, I guess, but anyway.
The whole thing's no good. I don't know how we can fix it, though.
Hey, listeners, here's your chance to rename the Sarah Talk Tech Chat. Do you have a creative name for a show that talks from a blindness perspective about technology, parenting, advocacy, sports, and everything in between? Send us your suggestions, and you could win 150 Saratech bonus dollars, which can be used to purchase Saratech products and services. The winner will be announced on the show airing Thursday, September 8th. Send your entry to resources@saratalk.com for your chance to win.
Yes, folks, join us on September 8th when yours truly and my new co-host, or our new co-host, Lisa Salinger, will be joining us for the newly named event. And if you enjoy this podcast, as I assume you do because you're listening to it, stay tuned. In December, we have a very exciting announcement we're looking forward to and hope you will be excited about as well. Plus, look for at least one, if not two, new podcasts to debut in September for the Sarah Talk Podcast Network. When I was in mainstream high school, because I did both, I went to the school for the visually impaired as well as mainstream public school, but there was a girl at the school that, as far as we could tell, was normal in every way. But her mom altered her behavior or declared her as disabled to get financial benefits. And now it looks like the U.S. Congress is looking at this very carefully and cutting benefits for children with disabilities because it may be resulting in children getting medicines that they do not actually need.
Yeah, this is a really disturbing thing, and it's not clear in the article, mainly because it's not clear from having examined reports and finalized on the findings or whatever, but it seems that some parents may be medicating their children just to be able to qualify for these benefits. So the idea is, okay, you have been diagnosed with ADHD or something like that, which requires some medication. And in order to make that diagnosis plausible, you need to be on some medication. Now, again, this may or may not be true. It seems that there could be an increase in the number of children who are diagnosed with mental disabilities. And that's sort of what this is focusing on. Congress is looking to see whether there is truly an increase in people who really do need these benefits, or if it's a matter of some behavioral problems that don't stem from mental disability then becoming classified as such.
Well, and it raises some very good points, because what if doctors are prescribing this? Because when you get on SSI, the children can also get Medicaid benefits, which is like the number one insurance you could possibly have in the U.S., only $3 for prescriptions and services. But SSI for children is the most rapidly expanding and is the biggest increase for kids with mental, behavioral, and learning disorders, including ADHD, speech delays, bipolar, and autism. So as you said, several family members in a Boston Globe article said that they felt that they had to medicate their children to qualify to get SSI and Medicaid, thereby taking, maybe many cases, unnecessary psychotropic drugs. But the Government Accountability Office, GAO, is investigating this and will put out their report by the end of 2011. Fred's Head has also posted an article on how to apply for SSI benefits for children under the age of 18.
Some interesting things coming out of Black Hat this year. In particular, one thing that has U.S. lawmakers a bit concerned, and that is the ability to hack insulin pumps and other medical devices like this. A researcher brought his findings to Black Hat. Turns out he was able to hack his own insulin pump remotely. He was able to turn it off. He was able to alter the results that it was showing. And he mentions that a hacker is going to have to be within 100 feet of the user to be able to do this hack, but that it is indeed very possible.
Well, he said with good antennas, maybe that could be increased up to a half mile.
Right.
And he mentions again that, heart monitors could be altered in this way. And that was mentioned a few years ago. And that's why, you remember for a while, there was a big thing about you couldn't have cell phones in the ER, part of the hospital where cardiac care was being applied, because they were paranoid about the liability. But, you know, this could be used to really help someone Imagine if it was a nurse or some entity like that. But unfortunately, what prevails here is here you set up a new portal for murder.
That's right.
Someone wanting to collect benefits or something like that. But yeah, this is a very interesting story, I think. And Jay Radcliffe demonstrated all this at Blackhead. Very frightening. But then you could argue, well, there could be other failures. There could be electromagnetic pulse. Well, if that happens, we're all doomed anyway. 90% of us anyway. I don't know. But
yes. I mean, with technology, there's always going to be the potential for using it in harmful ways. And the purpose of looking at this is to see how these devices can still be used wirelessly, but can be made a bit safer so that people can't tamper with this stuff.
Well, on more positive notes, you find yourself needing assistive technology but don't have the money?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. We found at least 9 solutions to help you to get what you need. Of course, there's always the very popular state funding, but with states being broker than a joke, as they say, we have to look at other means for this. There's some funding sometimes from the school systems under special education funding, especially if you have that IEP, that individual education plan in place. Sometimes I didn't know this, even Head Start or daycare things can get this underway going for you.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know that Head Start had services like that. But there are many other resources for this at SerilTalk.com. I believe there's even a breakdown for individual states. So if you are in need of funding, that is a must-have article to read. Too lengthy to go into here, but a wealth of resources. So by all means, check it out. Ricky, you want to tell us about phone fun?
Phone fun. I like it. In particular, let's talk about texting. How much texting do you typically do in a month? I was kind of fascinating reading this article, and it turns out that a teenager sends about 4,000 texts a month.
Yeah, that's amazing. And even that is chump change
to exactly.
The companies.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I think they figured out in this article that it costs about 58 cents in terms of data. But AT&T is looking to change plans such that you have all or nothing. You either get an unlimited plan or you get nothing at all.
Then you pay 20 cents. And that's what I'm opting for, because actually I pay $5 for 200 messages, which I don't even use. But so now I will opt for the 20 cents per text or 30 cents for a multimedia message.
Yeah,
With Sprint and the iPhone game, I might be going there as well. So
indeed,
this is not the time to be ripping us off, AT and Rip.
Yeah, not so much a smart move on their part. I probably will go with the unlimited if I have to make the change. Actually, people who are just getting into new contracts are the only folks that are going to have to make this change, at least as of right now.
Ricky, this is also, I think, some very exciting and well overdue changes coming forth. It looks like video and SMS support is coming soon to emergency services like 911. Now, as soon as I posted this on Twitter, I received an email saying that this is already in place in the city of Chicago. But the FCC Commissioner Julius Genachowski has outlined a 5-step plan to deploy what he calls Next Generation 911. He said the key component for this is deploying text messaging, photo, and offering video support.
Well, if you're looking for a tool to broadcast yourself either on your iPhone or your Android device, FlipZoo may be the app for you. Haven't yet tested this on the iPhone, but we do have reports from JJ over at Blind Bargains that this is, in fact, accessible on the Android.
Yeah, that's actually what I linked to at SerilTalk.com, so you can kind of hear the audio quality and play around with it. And what I think is cool is not only can you broadcast live, but as soon as you're done, there's an archive of what you've done.
Very nice.
Imagine going out and covering conventions, you know, exhibitors on the floor, doing your interviews live, and then just bang, instantly having that information available. Very exciting stuff.
Great.
Facebook. Great. Good old Facebook. Turns out that Facebook crime is on the rise. And by this, what we mean is cyberbullying, or there are definitely a lot of phishing scams. You see these things. Click here to see a video of some celebrity in a compromising position. And naturally, a lot of people click on that and it spreads like wildfire. And this stuff is, again, increasing by quite a lot. And users tend to still sort of fall for the same things. The article mentions that this type of crime is targeted toward the things that are our weaknesses. Again, using the compromised celebrity thing as an example, people for whatever reason want to see that, and they don't really consider, where is this coming from? How likely is this to be real? They just click on it, and another one bites the dust.
Yeah, and some other points here are violent crimes like date rape and robberies, and they're talking about the danger of enabling location-based services, letting people know where you are, or
That's
maybe in
right.
this case, where you are not when it comes to robbery. So you might want to turn off those location-based services. And
Michael, I'm going to be out of the house for a trip for at least a week. So just letting you know here on Facebook, I'm typing right now.
Okay.
I'll be away.
Well, we
yeah, pleaserobme.com.
No one will rob you. We promise.
But Ricky, I want to share with both of you guys something I've seen firsthand in the last couple of days. There's a new scam trying to exploit persons with disabilities.
Oh, really?
There is a little sophistication to this, because what they have first is a woman contacting you saying that she got benefits from this, and you know, saying you're very likely to be eligible yourself, and if you're interested, go to this website. Well, like you said, it's social engineering. People go to the website just to see what's there. Then, of course, they're contacted. I mean, Facebook, what a portal. They're clicking in through Facebook. They're able to communicate one-on-one with them. You know, no email, none of that stuff. This one has a fake FBI page. Again, I'm seeing this firsthand. So, yeah, people need to be very careful. Like you said, they are using current media trends, like top news items, be it the East Coast earthquake or the hurricane, or a lot of times celebrity news. And they quickly see, okay, this gets a lot of hits, but then as soon as the flare for that story dies down, they move on to something else. So we really, really have to be careful what we click on. And because if we don't, then, you know, these scammers and criminals are going to continue to use Facebook unless people become more selective about what they do, and they learn that that's not going to work, just as it has done with most people know now not to click on any questionable things in their emails, but certainly not all people either. By no means. But this could be why Facebook is updating their security and privacy settings. After slamming Google Plus, it looks like they see the threats of social engineering and definitely have updated their privacy and security settings. So probably time to go back in and take a look at that once again.
Indeed. Yeah, this is actually rolling out over the next few weeks. So if you don't see it right now, you may see it in your profile eventually. I'm glad they did this, and part of it is that they've made some privacy changes and introduced some controls that weren't there, and part of it is they've just moved some privacy options that have been there for a while to more logical locations, so you don't have to dig through 17 layers of options to find something just to be able to set who you want to share a post with, for example.
Yeah, I always thought they set those up just to get more page click-throughs. Everything was so scattered. I'm like, come on, just put it on one page or just
yeah,
a couple pages
horrible.
And let me sort it out. I know they reached some massive 1 trillion web page views or something like that. That's good for the bottom line.
And they changed some of the language as well. So it's not just everyone anymore. It's public. So when you're looking through some of these changes, you have to relearn your lexicon, because some of the drop-down menus now refer to different things. They seem more logical, though, because public means, oh, it's going out to the public, i.e. everyone. But if you've been a longtime Facebook user, you might want to sit down and go over some of these changes. And there are different guides like Lifehacker and others have been going through, kind of giving you a point-by-point on what to look for in these new options.
And there's so much good stuff at lifehacker.com. I can't believe all the stuff they come up with. Everything from cleaning your home to making yourself safer on the internet. Just a wealth of good stuff over there at lifehacker.com. Well, if you're like me, you probably occasionally download software and have, at one time or another, used download.com. But now both users and software developers who actually pay to put their software on download.com are just a little bit upset, and rightfully so, because now what they're doing is using these wrapper files, allowing them to install some third-party software additionally to increase their revenue base. But if I was a software developer, I would say you need to remove this, or, you know, I'm pulling my software off of here, because, you know, who wants to install their software and have it degraded by some third-party crap that you have no control over? And
yeah,
users can opt out of it, but I don't know. I'm not feeling that.
No,
you're gonna
this
take
is
my
ridiculous.
Software and bundle it with. Yeah, I hope they see the wisdom of that. or they'll see themselves quickly diminish in popularity or use. But there are some other options. So, and again, I'm speaking here as Michael Loff and not any official rep of Serotalk, but other options certainly include, and I would be looking at all these, fileforum.com, majorgeeks.com, filehippo.com, and yes, even Ninite, N-I-N-I-T-E.com for the 92 more popular programs that they support. But shame on you, download.com.
Well, when you think about who is the top auction or retail site, you probably think of eBay would take that spot. Guess what? You'd be wrong. This is actually kind of not surprising when you think about it, because they have lumped retail and auction sites together. But the clear winner here is Amazon, followed by eBay, and even Apple has a 9.7% share in this.
Well, this is interesting when you look at the percentages. So, okay, Amazon, they're the winner here right now, as of June, with 20.4%. But then you got eBay with 16.4%. So only one out of six items are sold through eBay, according to that data. But even when you add that with Apple, you're still under half of all auction sites available out there. So there are a lot of other options. But it's interesting that 1.39 billion people use auction sites. So in other words, a lot of people are happy to get things used to save money, although a lot of vendors are smart. And certainly if you're selling products and services, linking up with one or more of these sites might be in your interest as opposed to just having a standalone website.
Do you has good grammar?
No.
If you said no, you might find this particular site interesting. Or even if you do have good grammar, but you've spent a while writing a paper and you just need another set of eyes to take a look at it, you can check out Kibben, I believe it's pronounced. This is a free online proofreading community. So they have volunteer editors who will look at what you submit and they will turn around a corrected version or a version with feedback within 24 to 48 hours. Now you can actually pay to expedite this to make sure that you do get it in under 24 hours. But even if you don't do that, you're generally going to have a really quick response time to get what you've written back with some feedback. And of course, this can work well for research papers for school or even a press release that you're having to write or even a blog post. Before you post it, you might just want to have somebody take a look at it to make sure that the words flow nicely and make sure you haven't misspelled some things. So this is a really nice resource. I like it.
I'm just curious because it says that the suggestions are in the Kibben dashboard. So I'm hoping that that dashboard is accessible. So if any of you use this and have positive or negative experiences, by all means, let us know at resources@serotalk.com. It's a very cool service. I could see using that one myself.
Well, if you travel a lot, you might be interested in this site, which is a flying site for the disabled. And the site is just flyingwithdisability.org. It actually goes through methods of making flying easier, depending on which disability you have. There are several tips for what you can do to make your flight a smoother experience.
Yes, there's a variety of great categories, but the one that got my attention was damage to your wheelchair. And apparently, wheelchair damage happens quite often because airlines disassemble the wheelchairs to make them fit, in many cases, on the plane. As was found out in a story we found on a return trip to Oklahoma City from Washington, D.C., Jason Price found that when he got to Oklahoma City, his $20,000 wheelchair was in pieces, and really all he was left with was a seat and the wheels, and it's going to cost $1,200 to repair this.
Of course, the airlines say, well, we'll pay for this, and no problem, and we're very, very sorry, but that's more than just a little bit inconvenient, don't you think?
Oh, exactly. You're someone with no legs, and to get to your destination and find out you're really stuck, literally right there. You're using one of their wheelchairs, and
right.
Yeah, that's unacceptable. I mean, I hope something is done with this. You know, there are just some new rules passed by the Department of Transportation, fining airlines for a number of things, like making people sit on the tarmac too long, or even bumping people, you know, when they oversell the seating. So I hope that these concerns can be included in that or future legislation, because that's, I don't know, That's very frustrating because apparently it happens quite often. This is not an isolated incident. You know, we hear the stories with guide dogs, and those are, you know, important as well. But we're certainly not the only person with disability who has to deal with some real issues there.
Exactly. Well, you know, I fly a lot, and sadly, I don't usually get to fly first class. But there's an interesting article in Lifehacker that goes through some tips for being able to fly first class without having to pay for the premium. There are things like using your airline miles to be able to upgrade automatically. And they make an interesting point. You don't have to have flown a whole lot in order to accumulate these miles. A lot of airlines actually have credit cards, which will accumulate miles based on the things that you purchase. So you can have a whole lot of miles depending on whether you have one of these cards, and you can just say, hey, I want to upgrade. Also, things like when a flight has been overbooked, they will often seek volunteers to take a later flight so that they can actually get the plane off the ground. And naturally, you're in a bit of a position to bargain if you choose to do this. You can ask to be upgraded to first class. You can ask for a flight voucher for your next flight and negotiate the number of miles that you get on said voucher. And one of the last things that they mention for being upgraded to first class is just ask. All they can do is say no. You know, flight attendants are usually pretty harried, and they've dealt with mean, idiot people all day, and just giving them a smile and behaving in a friendly manner might get you somewhere.
Well, Ricky, I know you just got back from Canada. Good thing I didn't say it before you left.
That's right.
Stuff gets around on Facebook. Actually, I take the Canadians, they do some really cool stuff. We should talk about that, maybe some cultural or just differences on foods or whatever, traveling to other countries. But this is cool. The Edmonton Raceway held their third annual blind behind the wheel races on August the 20th. Apparently, they do drive smaller four-cylinder, two-seater cars with a sighted navigator that tells them how to drive around the oval track. But originally there were 20 participants, and ended up going down to 12 with all of the rainouts,
yeah,
I guess they had this year. But this is a fundraiser for the Alberta Guide Dog Association. So, wow. I'd love to do that someday. That would be too cool.
Absolutely. And there's no technology involved either, which I'm all for technology, but there's, I guess, something about trying to control a car and all you have is somebody yelling, left, your other left.
No, but it was interesting because the woman who won last year just, I assume you would get to do some test driving before you go live, and so she just counted the distance, you know, for the turns, the time that it would take her. So she smoked everyone, so there you go.
That's very cool. Well, have you ever done this, the dueling GPS thing, where either you and someone else, or just you perhaps, have a couple of different GPS options going at the same time and seeing which one does what?
Yes, we did this at CSUN, or you did, actually.
Yeah, Joe and I did this, yep.
Right, but Mike May had three of them going, plus his Sendero, and I think there was a Garmin or something, and a Magellan in the car.
Yeah,
so
it was
had five
Magellan
different GPS systems.
Yep, and he had a couple of them running on the iPhone, and what he found funny was that they were all yelling different directions, and he couldn't tell which one was doing what, because the voices in some case sounded very similar. Sometimes one would get a bit overzealous and tell him that he had reached his destination when in fact it was actually a couple of blocks away. But interesting experiment. You should try that sometime.
Yeah, now keep in mind, of course, he sells Sendero, but I don't really think he's being biased in this. He said really the one downside to the mainstream apps is you have to drill down a bit to get the point of interest information. And I would agree with that. I mean, it is there, but, you know, sometimes when you're in a hurry, and there are some other ways to accomplish that as well. But finally, for all your travel needs, Fred's Head has a post of 264 tips on traveling while blind or visually impaired. So that should answer any questions you may have if you haven't traveled or never flown on an airplane or want to know how to be a thug in those bad neighborhood Greyhound bus stations. Or maybe info on traveling to other countries. I've never done that. I don't know how that's different with international customs and things of that sort.
Yeah, I actually just had fun with this, and it was totally fine for me. I was expecting a bit more of an issue than I actually had. But one of the tips for traveling internationally is if you have a guide dog, make sure to understand the requirements when traveling to another country. You may have to get a health certificate, or in the case of going to Hawaii, things are quite a bit more stringent when it comes to animals. So always be sure to research what the qualifications are for getting your service animal into another country.
Even if that's a pet, you want to make sure, because there are certain rules about flying with animals and having them in a certain type of kennel. And you can always contact the airlines ahead of time. Some of the websites even have information on about traveling with your animals on board. And some animals are not allowed on board. So if you're a snakes on a plane kind of guy, you want to be absolutely sure that that snake can travel on there with or without Samuel Jackson.
Indeed.
I just got a pet ferret. I wonder if they can fly. They're pretty small.
Did
I
you?
I hope so.
You know, I didn't see any ferret regulations at all.
They're kind of like a cat, but they eat all fleas and flies and keep your feet from getting bit. So I don't know. Kind of cool. Just playing around here. Fred the ferret.
Aren't they really kind of long and skinny? Can you just drape the thing around your neck?
I guess you could, but I wouldn't want to do that. The nails are a little sharp for that, like a cat, so I don't think I'd want to do that. Well, not quite as sharp as a cat, but I still want to, I don't like putting any creature on my neck.
Yeah, it's a bit bizarre.
Anywho, that's what we've got for you in this podcast, and we invite you to listen to EOL, End of Line, at eolshow.com, and hear about food and music and all kinds of cool stuff. You guys covered about everything in there.
That we did. And we expect to cover even more everything next month. In any case, thanks so much for joining us on the Serotalk Podcast Network. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.